Mitchell, a big fun week. Apple, lots of announcements. Google announced a Pixel 8a. We'll talk all about this fun stuff. How you doing?
I'm exhausted.
It is exhausting, isn't it?
It's exhausting, and I think it's because, I mean, just to, you know, spoiler alert, you already said we're going to be talking about the new iPads. I've been waiting to replace my original iPad Pro from 2018.
Wow.
And this is very un-Mitchell-like. I've gotten better about not feeling the need, except for reviewing to talk on this show. But in terms of my daily use and you know, gadgets that I keep, I've gotten out of the yearly update cycle with my iPhone, because it's not necessary anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Because we see like incremental updates, and that way when I do get them, it's a more substantial update. And with iPads especially, to the point where, as we've talked about this show many times, I've been waiting to replace my 2018 iPad Pro, and I haven't had a great reason to do it, until now.
Interesting you say that, because I don't know if my opinion necessarily mirrors yours. But we can get into opinion a bit later, because I want to just kind of do a little recap for people who are just kind of joining us today to kind of tell them what was announced. Before I even get to Apple, I want to talk about the Pixel 8a. It's funny because this seems to be the trend now leading into Google's I.O. conference, which is their developers conference happening in just a couple weeks here. They announced like the A version of their flagship phone. So they've had the Pixel 8 out for just about a year now, just under a year. And now they've announced the 8a, which has basically the same specs and processing and everything of the original 8, with a little bit of enhancements across the board and a little bit lower of a price point, about $649.
Right.
So it's attractive, but a lot of the reviews and a lot of things people are coming out with are saying basically, wait, because the Pixel 9 is just around the corner. If it's not a month, it's a couple months away. So interesting how they time this. I don't necessarily understand why. Maybe it's just to have a product to announce.
I think it's probably to take some thunder away from other companies that are making similarly timed announcements. But when you think about it, in terms of phone sales, in terms of overall quarterly sales, because that's what businesses are about, their quarterly income, right?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know that this, it might make a little boost to the quarter, but in terms of their lineup, are they hurting themselves or are they possibly cannibalizing sales? Here's the problem. If you're going to put out a less expensive version of, why not put it out at the same time as the main device so that you give people the option at the time? The longer you delay, the longer you put off putting that device out, yes, you may get other people to say, okay, wow, I wasn't aware. Now, you know, it will stimulate quarterly sales, which again is what a lot of companies base their, you know, how the stock price flows. But at the same time, those same people are now four or five months out saying, well, if I just wait a little longer, I'll get the better version of the new phone. So I don't know that it necessarily does what it's supposed to do. Yes, it might stimulate some sales for people that are waiting for a less expensive device. But for most people, that less expensive device really becomes more useful when compared to another device that's coming out that has similar specs to,
or
but
even
a lower price
even Mitchell,
point.
Even to the last version, like to the main version, like the Pixel 8 versus the 8a. Some people are saying just get the 8 because the camera system's a bit better.
Right.
Let me tell you what's different on this phone. Like, I'll give you the recap here so we give you all the information. I said the price point, $649 US. It's got obviously all the Google AI stuff in the camera, circle to search, background noise reduction on calls on both sides, live translate, all the software stuff that really was dependent on the hardware on that new Tensor G3 chip. It's more durable, so it's got an IP67 rating versus the 7A of previous generations. Obviously, I said the Tensor G3 chip, so it's the same as the Pixel 8 and the 8 Pro, so you're getting a lower cost, higher quality, I guess, device with all that security that goes along with it.
It's very confusing. Yes. Go
7 years of OS updates and feature drops. So they're guaranteeing that anything that comes out for the next 7 years are going to be compatible with it, which again is almost a compelling reason not to upgrade sometimes.
And by the way, a little shot over the bow at Apple, who I think their obsolescence cycle caps out at maybe 5 years. I think they've been doing the 5-year obsolescence model where, you know, they'll keep, you know, your devices are up to 5 years old. We'll take the latest OS. After that, we make no promises. So this is a promise that at least you'll have another couple of years, if my math is right, more support from Google than you will from Apple, let's say.
Yeah.
So that's just, again, a little poke in the bear there.
Other small things, really, just like front-facing cameras, 13 megapixel, as opposed to the 8's 10.5 megapixel. I mean, that's really kind of where the similarities end. So I'm not really sure how far to take that. I'm waiting to get my unit hands-on, so I definitely will go into a little bit more depth and see what things are like. Definitely, I think on the software side, though, Google is making some pretty fun AI moves that I think really kind of make it natural. Instead of trying to force it and say, oh, go do this, they're just making things that make sense, like circleless search and just photo enhancements across the board.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. Okay. Apple.
Yeah, let's do this.
I'm really enjoying these shorter 30-minute media events that get straight to the point. They're fun that they're pre-recorded because it means they can't really go into too much analytical detail about what they've, you know, bought and all the stuff that's going on.
They can't screw up also.
Side.
That's the other thing I can tell you right now.
It's polished, but they still hold events in person in different places and actually preview them, which is kind of interesting. And you can follow that stuff on social media. So they started with the iPad Air.
Can you give me one before we start with the product?
I can give you anything you want.
Okay. And you're going to appreciate
your name's
this.
On it too.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for acknowledging that. For anyone that's watched an Apple keynote in the last 4 or 5 years, you will know what I'm talking about. If you've never watched one, you will never watch one the same again after I'm about to tell you this. So if you don't want the last, let's say, 5 years of keynotes and probably the next 5 or 10 years spoiled for you, you can stop listening now and then turn your radio back on in about 2 minutes after this rant.
Okay,
but I'm going to tell you something. Whoever trains the Apple employees to do these videos, because they have people that train, obviously, how to talk in front of a camera, how to be comfortable, which most of them still are not. You can't train comfort. I'm telling you that as someone who spent the last 50 years in front of a camera, okay? You can't train that. You either do or you don't. You get better at it, but there's no, you know, suddenly you will feel comfortable. But whoever trains them is obsessed with what they do with their hands when they're speaking. To the point at which I am so focused on their hand. Oh, this person's a fingertip toucher. This person is a hand clasper. This person is a folder. So the person that trains the Apple employees to do these on-camera keynotes that are pre-recorded tells them, I can hear them saying, okay, so when you're relaxing, interlock your fingers when you're talking. It becomes this hand puppetry that I'm so distracted by, I forget what the freak they're talking about. So I beg you, Apple, whoever is doing your training for the videos, please get rid of them or tell them to leave people the hell alone with their hands, because all I can see and hear is clasp, tuck, touch, fold, rock, up, down, repeat. It's like watching hand porn, and I'm tired of it. It's awful, and it's distracting. Let people do what they want. If they're a little unnatural or that's fine. It's better than watching, you know, how is this person going to touch their hands awkwardly while they're talking? I've been on stage and on screen for years. I never had an issue with, oh my God, what am I going to do with my hands?
Huh? Your 2 minutes are almost up.
Okay, that's it. That's it. That's my rant. Stop making people do these weird things with their hands. It's weird and distracting. Well, let's talk about the iPads.
So if you tuned out for 2 minutes and you're back now, Mitchell went on a little rant that ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, there we go. I'm sorry.
But it's okay. By the way, small correction. The Pixel 8a price, $679 Canadian, $499 US.
Okay that's so, actually a huge deal, but go ahead. That's a little correction.
It's
a huge deal.
Minor difference, right?
Yeah.
I live in Canada. You're in the US. It's
confusing. You live in Canada. We forgive you.
Mitchell, okay, so we started with the number one, they've refreshed the entire iPad lineup. This was iPad only, other than, you know, Magic Keyboard and Pencil, which we'll get into. iPad Air was the first one that came to the table.
Yeah.
And really the only difference here on the iPad Air is that they've introduced there's a couple differences.
Yeah,
they've introduced a larger size. So there's the 11 inch and the 13 inch.
That's huge. Figuratively, literally.
Exactly. Which is obviously a new size in the 13, which I guess is probably exactly the same size as the 12.9 was. But it's probably the screen real estate's a little bit bigger with a smaller pixel. Of course, once we get hands-on, we'll be able to figure that stuff out.
Correct.
They moved the camera on all the iPads, except for, of course, older ones. I know it's a landscape, because I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm holding an iPad mini here, and I've always used it landscape. I rarely use it in portrait mode, and if I do, that's not how I'm making phone calls, right? I'm using my phone.
Absolutely.
For making FaceTime calls.
You're only
or I'm
using
on landscape.
You're only using a top camera when you're holding it in your hand. Most people that are doing FaceTime have it in some sort of either the Magic Keyboard or a stand or balanced on their desk.
Yeah.
So, and you always find yourself like tilting to one side and they're trying to, you know, the what is it called? Center stage is trying to find you and center you from a camera that's off center. Thank God they finally moved it to landscape mode. It's fantastic.
Also, the speakers are now in a stereo array in landscape mode, again, for the way that people consume the device. So obviously, bezels are thinner. It looks like the dimensions on the iPad Air are roughly the same. They didn't really get into the details in terms of any big size differences in terms of the thinness factor of it or anything else like that. Other than that, it's really just it's really minor tweaks to pricing.
Well, don't forget the M2 processor now.
M2. The M2 processor, which is now two generations old because they announced an M4.
Well,
But yeah, so I find that kind of interesting. And you know, the iPad Air really is that kind of, while there still is an iPad, you know, that's lower than this tier wise. This is the one they're trying to get people into the door. This is the one that education is going to be kind of catered towards. And the interesting thing, though, is in Canadian dollars, it's $799 entry point on the Air.
$599 here.
Exactly. It seems so much better when you look at the U.S. pricing, right?
Yeah, it does.
It just seems like that's much more affordable.
Well, not only that, Mark, and this is a big deal. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but they did this for the Pro as well. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes, though. They also doubled the base amount of storage, which is not insignificant because it wasn't that long ago that our phones came with a base 32, and we said no device should come with 32 anymore. And then the base became 64. And now we're at the point, especially with an iPad, which we tend to need more storage, I think, than a phone normally, although they both download from the clouds. So they should be similar, right? But I think now they shouldn't be anything below 128. Well, now there's nothing below 128 for the regular iPad Air. It starts at 128, you know, gigs internal for the same starting price of $599, which I think is kind of cool. Very un-Apple to give you more for the same or less. So that was kind of a cool thing too.
As you said, M2. So the previous generation is A14 and A15, depending on which ones you're looking. Mm-hmm. They didn't remove the iPad mini from the lineup. It's still there. You could still buy that, as well as the regular just kind of entry-level iPad. One thing I noticed on the website, when you're comparing these side-by-side, like the 11-inch, the new one, the 10.9-inch, which is the 10th generation, and then the 8.3, there's a little asterisk underneath the 11-inch. It says, measured diagonally as a rectangle, the 11-inch iPad Air is 10.86 inches. Actual viewable area is less.
Okay.
I need to take I'm going to have to take a measuring tape out when I receive this.
What does that mean? So it says it's actually, the measurement is 10.86, but the viewing area
rectangle,
is less than 10.
Don't forget, because the corners are rounded, right?
Right.
So the corners are actually shaving size off.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And then so the actual screen and the viewable area, so the actual screen area is 10.686 inches, but there's no asterisk next to the 10.9-inch iPad, which was probably even less. That was probably more of a 9.7, right? Or a 9.9 or something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
So I found that interesting. But you get a lot of the smarts. You got the M2. You got the Neural Engine. They're really preparing this lineup for what I think is going to be some cool AI announcements.
Correct. Correct.
Which is kind of fun. And everything else is pretty much similar. You got Wi-Fi 6E that I got a little bit of an upgrade. You've got the cellular and the Wi-Fi model. And of course, everything else that goes along with the capacities. As you said, 128, 256, 512, and 1 terabyte. So that's the iPad Air M2. Talking all about Apple's recent media event, iPad media event, lots of cool things announced. Mitchell Whitfield and Marco Flalo with you. We talked about the iPad Air 11-inch with M2 and all that fun stuff. If you missed that, well, hit rewind or go back and listen to it again.
I also will tell you, to jump in real quick, if you're sending somebody off to college and you want my opinion on the best iPad to do it with, at $599 US for 128 gigs, an M2 processor, a landscape mounted camera, this is going to be everything a student needs and more. I'm telling you that right now.
I like the "and more" part.
Unless you were really doing some high-end CAD rendering, unless you're really doing some high-end video editing where you need the power of the latest processor, which in this case we're about to tell you is the M4, then don't even bother. If you're looking to send a kid to college, you're spending enough money, the $599 base Air, you know, iPad Air is going to be more than enough. Do you agree with that? I think it's now an incredibly capable machine.
Yeah, I think honestly the M2 was a very capable machine.
Oh God, yeah.
The M1 was a capable machine, yes. let alone the M2. So Apple announced an M4 processor. Now, there was a lot of speculation leading up to this event that they would do this, and the reason is that they're kind of preparing everything for AI, and they need the neural engine and the capabilities of the hardware in the M4 for that, so they're preparing it. We got two models here. We got an 11-inch I'm looking to the website to see if there's the asterisk there. No asterisk on this one. There's an 11-inch.
Asterisk free.
11-inch and a 13-inch. So they're a little bit of a size, you know, difference in terms of what we're used to. Obviously, thanks to smaller bezels. A brand new display that they described as having two layers of OLED screens on top of each
kind
other.
Kind of mushed together into one. And that was basically, from what they said, that was basically to achieve the brightness they weren't getting with just one OLED display. They weren't getting, but by combining those two, you get 1,000 nits of constant brightness and a peak brightness of 1,600 nits with HDR content. And that's pretty incredible. Not quite iPhone level, but that's pretty incredible for an iPad.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. It's insane. True incredible color gamut, like the P3 wide color gamut. True tone, which allows it to, you know, night mode and dark mode and, you know, adjusting in the eyes. Anti-reflective coating on all the models. However, if you buy the 1 terabyte or above, you can opt for a nano textured display glass option, which reduces the glare. And if it's anything like the XDR display that they had, it was more of a matte finish than a glossy finish. So I'm curious to see that hands-on because I don't know, but I've been playing with a TCL phone they sent me, the NexPaper 5G, which is, by the way, available now for only $300. And it features like this e-ink kind of display, like I'm holding it up for you so you can see it.
It's
got this kind of, it's called the NexPaper because it feels like paper. And I kind of like that. However, outside, it's kind of almost not unviewable, but it's really hard to see it outside when you compare it to a phone that has super, super high-end nits of brightness.
Is there a screen protector on that?
No, this is not a screen protector.
Oh, so I can see that matte. I can see how matte it is.
Exactly.
I thought you actually, on top of that, you had another layer. Wow.
No.
I've never seen a matte finish like that on a phone. That's actually kind of interesting.
If you want to see that, head on over to our YouTube channel. I posted a short video about that one.
Awesome.
So M4 chip, 12 megapixel camera on the back. It looks like it was a little bit redesigned. They've moved this camera to the landscape side, the stereo speakers, center stage, true depth, USB-C connector with Thunderbolt connectivity, USB 4, Face ID, Wi-Fi 6E, like everything. I mean, they packed absolutely everything into this device. And I went online and I did my purchase like I normally do. And I said, okay, well, I want the nano texture. So I go to configure. And again, you know, we have to, you know, remind you that I'm in Canada. You are not in Canada. We are in different places. So I go online and I configure this thing. And Mitchell, no joke, with tax, I was up to almost $3,000.
Okay, let me stop you for a second.
Okay.
Okay, because when we started to talk about this earlier, and I said, save it for the show, because I'm going to say that $3,000 price is totally on you. And here's what I mean by that, okay? Because you're going to have people like me that come in and go. It's so funny. We both had two different perspectives. Mark was like, I can't believe how much.
Because it starts at $999, right? It starts under $1,000.
I know. And so we both came at it from two different ways. Mark was like, I can't believe what I spent. And I was like, I can't believe what I spent. We both had the same thing to say, but very different points of view on it.
Okay.
So for me, that $999 entry point, and again, this is what I spent on my iPad Pro 6 years ago.
Okay.
And now I'm getting the OLED display, the M4 processor, because again, I had to upgrade. I think the back when I got mine, it went from 64 to 256 and made that hard jump.
Yes, I remember
And
that.
I think with that hard jump, it might have even been more expensive. My God, now that I think about it, it might have been $1099 instead of $999. So now I think I'm spending even less to get a more capable machine with a better processor, better cameras, better display, better everything. 6 years later, I'm getting a better deal. So that was my point of view. Now, what Mark didn't tell you, and it wasn't because he didn't want to, I'm just filling in the gaps here. In order to get that nano texture display, which is really, like he said, sort of a matte display with little micro nicks in it, so it creates these little levels that can't be reflected off of. It's very interesting technology. But Apple is only putting that display on the 1 terabyte model and above. So in order to get that nano display, you also have to get the iPad with 1 terabyte of memory, which adds a buttload of money to it.
Yes, it
does. I'm just putting it in perspective. People don't have to, if they don't want to do it, this is a power user thing because they're giving, and the other thing, Mark, is it's also a better M4 processor, which they don't tell you unless you look at it carefully. The M4 that's on the model you bought has slightly more cores than the M4 on the base model that I got.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yes.
I did notice in the specs it said up to 10 cores.
Yes.
So you get the higher end when you choose the higher end model.
So the second you had that nano texture, you were now getting a faster processor, 1 terabyte of storage, which I don't want to shame you, but that's a lot for an iPad. But you use it for work, so it's different.
Not only do I use it for work, but I mean, if you're editing video on this stuff and you actually want to do multimedia stuff and you want to, you need that solid state kind of almost caching on there. Yeah, you can plug in an external drive.
No, you're right.
And it works on Thunderbolt, but you know, you do. Again, I also, like you, I don't upgrade this every year. Like the iPad, I really, like, I mean, I got a lot of iPads around the house, but this is like my go-to iPad that I kind of carry around with me. And I think thanks to the new Magic Keyboard and the Pencil and stuff like that we're going to get into, it's becoming a more and more capable device. It's never going to replace my laptop, or not yet. But I think for me, it does make sense. But and, the price, yeah. I had sticker shock there.
Well, I'm building it right now in real time with you on the air with our listeners.
Yes.
So basically, jumping from the base 999 with 256 gigs of storage, which is fine for me, to go to 1 terabyte is adding $600 US. That's just jumping from 256 to 1 terabyte. So now I'm selecting the 1 terabyte like you do. That brings a 15. Okay. Now the nanotexture glass adds another $100 to it. So that's now $1,699 US. And you got yourself the case, right?
I got the Magic Keyboard.
The Magic Keyboard, I mean. Okay.
Yes.
Which, by the way, we'll talk about in a second. That was also redesigned. That's another $300 US. So that's $1,999 US before anything else, before tax, before anything. Did you put AppleCare on top of that?
I do the AppleCare monthly.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it. With
because I prefer to just have it forever as long as I want it for.
I got you. So yeah, I mean, in US dollars, we're talking about the low twos. Canadian, we're talking close to three, which still seems like a lot. Is there something we're missing here?
It does. No, I think it's really the storage jump. And I also chose 5G. Like I did Wi-Fi and cellular.
Oh, come on. You got to tell me that. I'm trying to build you. I'm trying to build an apples to apples model here. Wi-Fi. Okay. Yeah. I should have gone with, that adds another $200 to it.
Yeah.
My God, you went hog wild with this thing. I feel like I got the deal of a lifetime.
Yeah. I need the connectivity. I don't want to have to worry about Wi-Fi hotspots and then not being able to connect.
Yeah.
And you know, I wanted to try that screen out because, I do, like, I mean, in my broadcast world, I do stuff outside.
Yeah.
And to be able to see it better and not have to worry about stuff like that is a bonus to me. Listen, there's no hiding the fact this is obviously a higher end device. I think with some of the announcements they made today about Logic Pro and Final Cut updates for the iPad, which we probably won't even get into today.
Yeah.
It really is bringing it closer and closer for those people who want it to that replacement of a laptop. Why they haven't pulled that trigger yet, I just don't know. Maybe it's just not ready yet. Maybe they just don't want to cannibalize their own sales.
I think you nailed it. I think they're worried about cannibalizing their MacBook Air more than anything else.
I think we're going to see the MacBook Air disappear one day and be replaced by something like this. But I'm curious to see how thin this really is because it looks pretty darn impressive. And the 11 inch is under a pound. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is pretty cool. Like, I'm looking forward to this. It's been a long time. Like, we've been talking, 2 years since any pretty significant update.
This is huge.
And design-wise, we haven't seen an update in longer than that. Like, this hasn't changed in since you bought yours, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is going to be huge. And I tried to make the jump to the 13 inch a while ago. It was just too unwieldy
too
for me because also the 13 inch, if you remember, of the Pro that came out 2 or 3 years ago, that screen technology actually did change. They went to a special.
Correct. A micro LED, I think, or something like that.
Micro LEDs, yeah. I think. So if you got the larger size, you were able to get an upgraded, updated screen to this micro LED. I still want that. And I tried doing that, but I was like, oh, it's too heavy. It's too big.
It is, though. So, it is too heavy. Like, I find, honestly, I'm like, you know, I've got the iPad mini in my hand here. Okay. And the iPad mini is like, this is like, okay, I'm in Star Trek world now.
Yes.
Okay. This is like, this is cool. If I was walking around doing stuff,
here's mine, by the way, I go with it everywhere too. Yeah, that's my go.
Taking
go
data or whatever like that.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be my, and the 11 inch I find is as pocketable in terms of just kind of carry, but I can just do more with it, right? Like I just do more on that screen. And the 12.9 inch, which is, I just, as you said, it becomes awkward in the hand. It becomes off balance. It's heavy.
It's no longer a one-handed device, basically, which I like my iPad to be.
And with that, I found you needed to use the Magic Keyboard, and that was a heavy add-on.
Oh,
you know?
That was it. It made it into a laptop.
It did.
But heavier.
And a non-functional laptop yes. in what you wanted to do as well. So I think that 11-inch is kind of the sweet spot. I do like the mini to kind of just kind of run around with. As you said, I can almost stick this in my pocket if my jeans were big enough. And they're keeping the mini around, which is good, which I think
they
is
will,
good.
They will update that. But I think you nailed it earlier when you were talking about, you know, sort of why Apple has never debuted an M laptop where, you know, laptop / desktop level GPU or CPU. They've never debuted it in any sort of an iPad before. It's never happened. It's always been in some sort of a computer. And I think, like you said, with the Worldwide Developers Conference coming up, they needed to talk about AI. And in order to talk about AI and the new software, they needed an existing chip to be in the ecosystem that could take advantage of everything they wanted to do.
Yeah. And they mentioned AI a lot in that keynote.
They did.
They talked about AI a lot. Not in the way that we I think, hope for it, which is
more machine learning kind of way.
Exactly. More kind of it's like they would have said machine learning, but they just replaced the word. It's like they selected all, you know, did a search for machine learning and replaced it with AI in the script.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just to get it out there so that they can't be told that they're not doing it. But I'm really intrigued now by what's coming at WWDC. It's about a month away. And this is an opportunity for them to really shine. And I think this has now set the stage for it.
I totally agree. And I wanted to put one thing out there, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I'm sorry. I know I've been talking a lot. I apologize for being so excited and over talking a little bit, but I need to know what you think about this.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks about Apple as a technology company, both a hardware company and a software company. I've always thought of Google and Microsoft as being software first, hardware second.
Yeah.
Apple has sort of been reinventing itself over time, starting off with hardware, now pushing the software, but still having a foot heavy into the hardware business. Because of that, a lot of people have been disappointed, myself included, that Apple hasn't either released or shared any information on what they plan to do on the AI side. We've seen, you know, what the Samsung phones are going to, you know, can do, what the Google phones can do, what their software is capable of doing. We haven't seen that much from Apple. But I don't want people to forget, because of Apple's immense amounts of money, they don't necessarily have to change the world in terms of putting out their own AI solution. They can license from other companies. They can license from Microsoft and Google's technologies and leverage those techs for their own hardware. Because here I was thinking, what's Apple going to do? They're going to be playing catch up again. Everyone has passed them again. But again, they don't have to necessarily have all the innovations on the AI side. They can license that. They can pay for the license to, you know, to use that technology on their devices. Other companies can license out. That's what I meant to say. Their AI technologies to Apple, and that would be perfectly fine. But Apple needs to show some sort of, you know, proof of concept of how things are going to work on their devices. You know, so, if they're not going to come out with the technology themselves, how is it going to be implemented in the Apple ecosystem? That's a big question.
So I'm fairly confident that in Apple's roadmap, there is going to be something that they do on their own. They have acquired a bunch of different companies from different countries that have a lot of experience in AI. That's what they tend to do, is buy little companies and use those resources.
Oh, they've done that forward. With other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They did it with Siri. I mean, not a great example, but
God, she's dumb. Yes.
And we have seen historically that they're not afraid to license. Think about Google search, you know, for example, they're not afraid to license. Think about Intel. However, they license, it tends to be for a shorter period of time, so they can have a little bit more time to refine what they want to do on their own.
That's true.
Because they don't seem to like to have to rely on other people, you know? And I get that. When you have that much money and you have that much power, then why would you want to rely on somebody else when you can do it yourself?
Yeah, they use it to jumpstart their own innovation.
Correct.
You're right. That's a good way of putting it.
But I think any other technology they license, whether it's a combination of OpenAI and Google Gemini and Microsoft, whatever it might be, it doesn't change the outcome at the end of the day, which is they're going to use other people's AI engine to do it in a way that is uniquely Apple, in a way that they could easily just kind of say, okay, let's pull Google out of the picture and replace with our own and continue those same features, if not expand about it. Same thing with Microsoft. I think they can do the same thing there. And I think there is a unique opportunity here. And there always is a unique opportunity with Apple to marry the hardware with the software experience, which is what really sets them apart.
That's their strength.
And what I've noticed over the past while, especially when you pay attention to the finances and the earnings call, is that their software side of things and their services is growing exponentially above their hardware. I mean, they needed new iPads because the iPads have been on a downward slump because just sales aren't there. Because also people also tend to watch them and say, okay, I shouldn't buy now because something new is going to come, whether they know it or not, right? Mm-hmm. So as we've talked about before, I think we're going to see a slowdown in the hardware cycle. You know, I think we saw it with the iPad. Maybe the iPhone will get to that point and other people might follow suit. But I think that software and services, they see the longevity there. There's less hassle with having to maintain support and infrastructure and reliance on third party. It's easy. While they still maintain that stronghold on the hardware, I could imagine a day where Apple as a company is just a software and services company. If they ever decided to license iOS out to anybody else, but you know, there's a control issue there, and I totally get it. But yeah, I think that whatever we see at WWDC on the AI front, I think we're definitely going to see it as a consumer. We're going to see it in the face of Siri and various things throughout the operating system that are a little bit more sparkly than other people might be doing.
Yeah.
But I think the real use for AI is going to be the Microsoft model, which is kind of passively throughout everything.
Yeah.
You know, being able to have suggestions and emails and calendars and pages and numbers and Keynote. And I think on the developer side, can you imagine if their next version of Xcode, which is what builds every single app that's out there on iOS, on a Mac, or on a phone, you can literally type in, design me a framework for an app that does this, and 99% of the work is done for you with AI.
That's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And that's what will happen. It's funny, I started thinking about, and then we all know that our devices are listening, but I did know they're also reading our minds. Because I started thinking, man, because, you know, I talked to your son, Zach, about video games probably more than you do.
Yes.
I started thinking to myself, because Zach and I have been talking a lot about handheld consoles and emulators and all this different stuff. And I was thinking, do you realize what AI is going to do in terms of developing video games and letting characters create a life, a backstory? Like, you're creating these NPCs. These non-player characters in video games, and the whole, you know, the amount of time that's spent programming these characters that you don't play as, but that you interact with in a game to make them as lifelike as possible. There's a lot of time that goes into programming that gets taken away from actually programming the rest of the game. Well, a good AI will just give each of these characters a unique life and backstory at the snap of your fingers. And suddenly that's all done. Filling in frame rates to make games faster. That's going to be all done. We're already seeing AI take over in certain, you know, video graphics cards. I mean, that's why NVIDIA stock jumped so much. Because if a graphics engine is able to use AI to replicate and almost design stuff itself, and that's kind of like what you're talking about as well, that is game changing. And just seeing people do it on their Samsung device or Google devices, like changing things on their phone. It is mind blowing. So we've just scratched the surface. And again, Apple is sort of retraining the consumer to think about what Apple is known for and letting them know that, hey, we do make hardware, but this is where we're really going. And they've had to train the business world not to expect iPhone sales to knock everyone on their butts every quarter because they're putting so much into software. So Apple is sort of retraining and reimagining again who they are. It seems to happen on a yearly basis, sometimes more hardware, sometimes more software. But I'm really excited about WWDC this year and seeing how Apple, forgetting whether they design their own AI or how they're able to implement and leverage other people's technology.
So we talked about the iPad Air, Mitchell.
We did.
We talked about the iPad Pros.
We did.
We talked about the mini and the regular iPad that are still in the lineup.
And Mini will get an update soon. Mini will be toward the end of the year, mark my words.
And we still need to talk about the Apple Pencil and the Magic Keyboard.
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Let's go with the Pencil because I think the Pencil is not more interesting. I kind of like what they're doing here because, again, when you think about a writing implement, you think there's only so much you can do, right? You can make it a faster response time, make it, you know, put the different pointer, the different tips of pencils and pens and paint, make it easier for creatives to use. But they did something truly interesting, I think, with the gyroscope that they put in this. Mm. And what are they calling the new movement? Because it has a
rotation.
It has a certain kind of name. I'm going to have to look it up here too. Apple Pencil. Here we go. They're gonna give us. They have a cool name for everything.
Well, so here. So while you look that up, so we've got a new sensor in the barrel that can detect squeezing motions.
Barrel roll. That's what it's called. Sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
So you can bring up a tool palette just by squeezing. Obviously, the goal here is to be able to do stuff without having to take your hand off the actual pencil itself.
With haptic feedback for that squeezing, by the way.
Exactly. And you could switch tools like weights or colors, all without interrupting your creative process, which is really cool. I could see my daughter definitely using this. And of course, as you said, a custom haptic engine that delivers kind of a light tap. You know, they've managed to figure out how to make vibrations feel like taps. And of course, that gyroscope is what is going to allow users to use that kind of barrel roll rotating. So you can actually, if you use a brush, for example, that has a, let's say it's a long head, it's not just a tip, you can actually rotate that and actually get true drawing, I guess, what's the word? It's more like natural painting.
You go from like a pencil drawing to like painting with like a wider like paintbrush. You know, it's crazy. It's really cool.
And they had the CEO of Procreate on, which is one of the most popular drawing apps on the iPad, who was raving about it because they're now also opening all these services up to third-party developers to take advantage of and really use. So we're going to see a whole slew of new products come out with this. And the biggest one, biggest change in my opinion, of course, the biggest addition is Find My. How many times have you lost that freaking pencil? I don't even know. Honestly, I'm looking around now. I don't know where my pencil is. Thank you.
It can roll behind a cushion. It rolls. I mean, you know.
I know.
This one,
it does.
I think is, this one can roll too. I'm trying to see the design of it. Is it more flat?
So they didn't talk about the actual dimensions of it. It seems like it's a little bit thinner. I guess it has, because right now the Apple Pencil kind of is roughly in line with the width of the iPad. It's a little bit thicker because of the round, but I think it's gotten a little bit thinner. It looked like that when we saw the pictures of someone holding onto it, which was kind of cool. So I'm looking forward to this because do you use an Apple Pencil much?
Not really. You know, I used to use it for signing contracts, for signing documents. Yeah. But that was pretty boilerplate.
I sketch things. I do like diagrams and stuff.
See, you use it in the way it's meant to be. Mine is just like signing my name doesn't really show off everything I could do. It's kind of a waste. But I like the ability to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I used to take notes with it, but my handwriting is so bad on a regular day.
You couldn't read your own thing.
No, it was pointless. Like, it couldn't even transcribe my gibberish. All new Magic Keyboard and Smart Folio. So the Smart Folio is just that kind of like just a cover, like a cover of the front and back. But the Magic Keyboard, I mean, I'm curious to know dimensions and weight, but it definitely is different because it has a new function row. So it gives you the function row that you're used to having on an Apple keyboard.
Yep.
Things like controlling the brightness of the keys, the brightness of the pad, going to like center stage and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. And a larger trackpad with haptic feedback again. So before it was a physical trackpad. It moved on the previous generation. Don't hold me to that. I'll dig mine out here while you talk a bit.
No, I have it right here.
It's
right here.
There you go. So, I mean, you have it there. So it actually physically moved, I believe.
It physically clicks.
Hold on, haptic feedback.
Here we go. Listen.
So the new one does what our MacBooks do, which it doesn't move at all.
Yeah.
It has haptic feedback to give you the impression that it's clicking and moving.
Which is great.
Which means it's probably thinner and lighter. And the cool thing is it all powers off of your iPad battery. So you don't even have to worry about like another charger or something else to charge. The only thing that I found with the Magic Keyboard to date has been that it's always added a fair bit of bulk to the iPad. And I'm not a fan of that. Like I like the thinness factor. I like to be able to just pull it out and go. But you know, I'm curious to see if this one is a little bit thinner and smaller and how it feels in the head.
Well, they keep on going on that it was that it's aluminum, and I'm looking at it right now. You can clearly see it's definitely got some metal in there. Now, this is great radio. I'm trying to describe something I'm holding in my hand. For those of you watching this on YouTube, you could see my old beaten up Magic Keyboard here. This one is covered in that rubberized coating.
Yep.
So you can't really tell what kind of metal, if it's steel. Clearly, there's some sort of metal structure in the existing, which will now be the previous generation of the Magic Keyboard. There's something metal because it's got some heft to it, definitely.
Yeah.
You just can't really see because it's covered in this, it's covered in this rubberized coating. So is the aluminum, like you said, is the aluminum going to be lighter? The weird thing is the keyboard looks, if you look at how thin this is right here, I don't know that it looks any thinner than this. It looks maybe even a little thicker. It's hard to tell, which would be interesting because they made such a big deal about how thin the new iPad is. They made it much slimmer and lighter. So it'd be funny if the way that you use it most of the time, which is for me is the Magic Keyboard, was actually heavier.
And it's funny because they don't break down the specs like they do with computers on the accessories on the website. So you really have to wait to kind of feel that in hand. By the way, all this stuff available to order right now. Like you can go to the website and order it. And shipping is right now, it says delivers May 15th. I'm sure that'll slip. But I mean, that's a week. I mean, so this stuff's already been in production for quite some time, obviously. Yeah. And the stock is arriving there. And that, I mean, other than some software, which we can dive into a little bit if you want to, I mean, that's the sum of it. $349 for the keyboard, $349.
$299 US for the 11-inch.
Yeah, so that's Canadian. Yeah, I mean, so cool stuff. I'm looking forward to playing.
Oh, I am too. I am too. And I'm looking forward to, and again, this is one that I waited 6 years to do. This was the first time that, okay, I said, okay, it's not just a spec. Because honestly, my 2018 iPad Pro is still pretty snappy. I still feel like it's pretty snappy in terms of what it does. You know, Apple puts out these new processors every year before we even get a chance to maximize what the previous gen could do. And it's like, wait, this is still really... So I've had a chance to experience what, I guess, what was it, the A12 Bionic? Is that what I was rocking for the 2018? And I've had no issues with that. But then again, I haven't known any better because I never went to the, you know, the 15 or the M1 or the M2. So for me, it's going to be a huge upgrade, even with the sound. The screen finally is an upgrade for the 11-inch. I know they upgraded the other one a few years ago. So on every level, Mark, I'm excited to try this and share our both of our opinions. And even if it isn't like life-changing, I know that I will see the advantages of the M4 processor. I know I'll appreciate the OLED display, even if it's just for watching movies, to get those true blacks in there when you're watching, have the more cinematic experience. So I know I'm going to enjoy it, and hopefully I'll be able to hold on to this for the next 6 years as well. We'll see.
I think you will. I think you will. Yeah. You know, the majority of the AI stuff was really about a couple pieces of software, and that was Final Cut Pro for the iPad. They call it Final Cut Pro 2. For the iPad, which is just confusing in general.
And Logic
was the
other one?
Where, this and Logic. Logic, which is the audio editing and the music creation, which is kind of cool. This I'm actually quite looking forward to getting hands-on because it's not only on the iPad. They actually updated Final Cut Pro for the Mac as well with a lot of workflow accelerating features that make new ways to manage color correction, video effects. You know, on the iPad, obviously, people love the portability of it, and they've added a new multi-cam option where you can use other devices as cameras in your workflow.
Oh, that's
cool. So, yeah, this is pretty cool. So you can pop your phone up somewhere. Let's say the example they gave, they were at like a rock climbing wall, and they had cameras all over the place, and they were all feeding in wirelessly to Final Cut.
Oh, that's awesome.
An app called Final Cut Camera. It's a new video editing capturing app. It allows them to view up to 4 iPhone or iPad devices and provide a director's view of each in real time, which is pretty cool. And they each can have adjusted settings from the main Final Cut Pro iPad app. So you can dial in things like focus, zoom, exposure. My mind's going on other things I might be able to take advantage of with this kind of feature. Think about live streaming. Think about podcast studios.
Oh, yeah.
Think about people who don't want to go out and spend $3,000 on the camera but have phones lying around.
Yep.
This is definitely going to be a cool experience. Okay. And this is where they're focusing on AI. On the Logic side, which is the music creation, they talked a lot about beat creation and different instruments and tying in those instruments with different compositions. Less so up my alley, but I'm curious if you're listening and you use Logic to let me know what your thoughts on that. If you actually use your iPad, I know a lot of people use their iPad for music creation. It's not something that's up my alley. It's just not something that I've gone down that rabbit hole before.
Well, here's something that is up your alley, so to speak. That sounded worse than I meant it to. Here's something that is up both of our alleys. Have you heard anything about Adobe and Adobe Audition possibly coming to iPad? Do we have any news if that's going to happen ever?
No, not only have we not heard anything about that, and I used to be very tightly in tune with the Adobe world, thanks to some insiders and friends and the beta test pre-release team. They've since disbanded a lot of that. So access to information but they're spending more time pushing out updates to Premiere, even audio enhancing updates to Premiere that aren't even making its way to Adobe Audition. So I got a sense that either they're going to try and bring these two together like DaVinci did in DaVinci Resolve. Originally, it was Fairlight. It was a separate Blackmagic audio editing app, and they brought it into DaVinci Resolve. I think they might force
you
go down that route.
Yeah, but that forces you to pay for something that you don't need, which really sucks.
Yeah, which is kind of annoying because, but I mean, with the subscription model, it's like no one's going to complain, but we will. Like, I mean, I still use Adobe Audition every single day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be interesting, but no news. And I've reached out and I've tried to get some information.
Interesting.
And while there's constant updates on Premiere, constant AI updates and really cool stuff coming on the video side of things, even audio updates, there's nothing that's come to Audition, which
is disappointing.
A little bit disappointing, yeah.
Because to me, and I just had a session today doing a Disney animated show that I'm on. I'll let you know when it's on the air. I can't talk about it yet.
Yeah,
shameless plug. But I was talking to the engineer. He's using Pro Tools to run his studio.
Yep.
And I said, oh, I used to use Pro Tools. Was it Pro Tools LE, which was the lighter version?
Yep.
That used to come with a lot of the hardware, with a lot of the breakout boxes, and the interfaces used to come with Pro Tools.
Well, you used to need the hardware for that, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would use it, and it was fine, but it was meant to be an all-encompassing solution. So you had tracks for instruments and different stuff that...
Well,
as
but
a
I mean,
voice-
Pro Tools was originally and is still... the staple in the audio, in the music recording industry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And again, if you're a voice actor, if you're someone that just does animation or voiceover work,
overkill.
The music aspect has no meaning to you whatsoever. Yeah. Layering different tracks has no meaning. As long as you have your dual track mono, you're fine.
Yeah.
You don't need to do anything else. So that's why I loved Audition, because it was made for voice recording. It was made for audio and not music. So,
and on Audition, you know, by the way, like, I challenge people to this day. I'm an Audition user at the core. Like, I am expert level. I've been using this for, you know, almost 30 years now. And I hands down categorically think it rivals all of the other software as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Even if you want to create music with it, live recording and all that stuff. So everything has its little strong points.
That's true. I just felt for voice work, it was much simpler to...
It can be. You can use it more if you want. You can multitrack and layer.
That's true.
A lot of that. If you want a just simple, straightforward editor, yeah, it's great for that. But there's also a lot of free tools out there that people tend to be using. Because
Twisted Wave, Audacity.
There's a whole bunch of different programs.
There was something for iPad that was out there for a while.
Yeah, I've never heard of it before.
Yeah.
And anyhow, I'm curious, but I will reach out to Adobe to see what's up there. So that's everything that came out with Apple this week. Obviously, I did reach out to try and get my hands on these things before my own product get in. We'll see which one arrives first, and we'll definitely give you a glimpse of what's to come. And if you check YouTube now, there's a bunch of people who are at some of these like different events they had worldwide where they got to go hands-on with some of this stuff. So you can check that out, and we'll link to it on our social media as well.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, The Fountain App, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent, almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.